off.
I know.
Hi, we're the librarians. Librarians.
Everybody, welcome back to the library sessions. We are here today with a public librarian guest, another guest on our podcast. But I am Jennifer Laubond.
And I'm Martinique Hallerduff.
So, to reintroduce ourselves in case you're a new listener. And if you are a new listener, welcome. So today we are talking to somebody. I'll let her introduce herself, but she is one of my favorite librarians in the universe. So how's that for an introduction? Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, well, that's kind of amazing. Thank you so much. My name is Mickey Wolf. I'm the Information Services Librarian and Assistant Director here at the Sharon Public Library in Sharon, Massachusetts.
Awesome. And so first, go ahead and just tell us a little bit about the teaching that you do and what else you do. I mean, what's your job kind of consist of?
Well, I love my job because I get to do a little bit of everything. For instance, today I just left the desk and I'm doing crafting stuff all day. We're doing a program to promote the library. It's a Green Day program here in the beginning of May. And so for the library, we're going to show people how once a book is read and it's kind of falling apart, it's not the end of it, that there's more life to books than just that. So right now I've got glue all over my fingers because I was just making Scrabble necklaces and earrings out of microfilm. And we're going to give them out to people at the festival. So just ways to show people that, you know, upcycling, recycling, there's so much more you can do with books than necessarily just read them when you can't read them anymore and when they're falling apart. But that's what I love about at the public libraries. If I can think it, I can do it. I'm really lucky to have an incredibly supportive director. And she, as long as I can kind of come up with it and I can figure out how I'm going to fund it and get it all together, she's really willing to let me run with it. So I do a lot of, I do a lot of crafting programs. I actually have people come in and we teach all sorts of crafts. I also, though, do a ton of technology programming. We do a lot of one-on-one tutoring where people can come in and they have questions about their device that they just got. We can't fix it for them or, like, set it up for them, but we can sit there and kind of help them through the process, guide them through the process. Because if not, a lot of times people just get frustrated. I mean, they spend a ton of money on space, and if they can't set it up, it's just a really expensive brick. So, and sometimes they can't get to the Apple store. They don't have the money to pay a tech to come. So the public library is, I think, a good spot for people to come and kind of get their questions answered. So, other than that, we do a lot of teaching on technology, but also like a lot of how to on websites. And we do a lot of teaching on photo editing. And just basically if people ask questions, we research it. That's what the fun of being a librarian is, I think.
Gosh, your enthusiasm is so contagious. You're making a solid pitch. I feel like I want to be a public librarian already.
Oh, it's really, I mean, I worked in an academic library throughout school. And while I really loved it, I love the variety that I get at the public library. Every day is kind of a new day. I don't know who's going to be walking in the door or what I get to do or kind of what I get to learn. And that's the most fun thing is what do I get to learn?
Oh. Well, that actually kind of leads into my question. I was taking a look today at your recent fame, your articles that were in the newspaper. You had, it looked like maybe two articles in the newspaper, but I only found one of them. And then one on the Massachusetts Library System blog. So I was reading those articles today, and one thing struck me. So in the newspaper article, they called you a technology wizard. Which I love because I think you are one. But then you very modestly in the Massachusetts Library System Post interview that you did, you said that you are better at teaching than technology. And I thought that was a really one. Like I said, I think you're very modest. But two, I think what I was curious about that. So what do you think, like what skills do you think make you a good teacher? Like why, you know, what made you say that? And can you use those skills to teach just about anything or, you know, how does that work for you?
I think so. One of the things that, and it really surprised me is actually I have patience when I teach and I don't think I'm a very patient person, but I get people tell me afterwards, they're really happy that I took the time and kind of worked with them and help them figure stuff out, which is it's surprising to me. It's kind of fun, but not something I would have ever predicted, particularly with myself, that I would be have anywhere within the realms of patience. just one of those things that you kind of discover. And I think honestly part of it is, I mean, I'm a parent, I have a 13-year-old now, and growing up, kind of just learning the patience with her and as she's learning things. But it's also, I mean, people learn in different ways. And so one of the biggest things I try when I teach the technology programs is I don't have a set way to teach, is I try to figure out who they are, how they're going to learn, and can I adapt what I'm trying to teach to explain it to them the best way? So some people understand things when you're very, this is A, this is B, this is C, this is D. Other people need it related into more of kind of a, I want to say folksy sort of way, but I don't mean to be condescending like that. But rather than just saying, I have people when they come to the library, I say, could you open up the browser? And they look at me and say, what's a browser? I said, okay, so now I know where we need to start with you. I said, okay, visually, do you see something that looks like a fox eating its tail, or does it have something with an E on it? Can you find that for me, and can you open it up? And so we can do that in person, or I can do it on the phone with people. I do a lot of tech help with people on the phone, and to have those visual kind of clues is good. I think that's the biggest thing with teaching is not to get so locked down as to what you're trying to teach, and to forget, like, who you're trying to teach it to. Because if you lose your student, you're just kind of chatting away at nothing. If they're not learning and they're not actively participating with you and actively learning, you've really done nothing. So, and the technology wizard part, by the way, I just, that I just figure I'm in a way being set up for, like, failure. Because I know, I have friends who are techies. Like, I have friends who are programmers. They know a lot about computers. I think, better at synthesizing information and explaining it to people. And somehow it sounds like I know things when I really don't.
Yeah, there is that thing with a bunch of us having library information science degrees. I've had people say, well, you're kind of the same thing as like information technology. You know all that stuff, right? Your degree's in information. And I'm like,
not really.
Right. So, Mickey, you had such great things to talk about teaching, and I wonder how you became a teacher, how you improved. Is it did you have any preparation in library school? Was it being mentored, or was it all sort of self-reflection or something else?
So I have to say, Gemma's telling me that she's going for another master's in instructional design and online learning, and I'm super jealous because I really want to go back and use that as well. I come from a family of educators. I come from a family, my mom's a teacher, my sister's a teacher, I have aunts who are teachers, and other family members who are involved in various ways with education. So it's just something I think I probably just absorbed. I can't even say, like, I learned here or I learned there. I have learned a lot lately. Our Massachusetts library system, we have consultants, and they're incredibly great resources. And I was really lucky enough to participate in something called Project SET, which is Skills Empowerment and Technology for the Next Generation of Library Leaders. And so I work with a couple of our MLS consultants, and they're super, super skilled in teaching all about instructional design and technology, and it was really, really exciting. So I did learn in the past couple of years, I've learned a lot from them as well, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Gosh, that family of educators, I have also found that to be so true. I come from a family of educators, and even the conversations I have with my wife, who teaches 3 to 5-year-olds with significant disabilities, and we still, I mean, and I teach college students information literacy, and yet we have so much in common when we talk about the practice of teaching. So that's really interesting.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I have a question. So, you know, Martinique and I both work in academia. Do you think that there is opportunities for public librarians and academic librarians to collaborate on things? I mean, what can you see from your side?
I definitely think so. One of the things that I think for a lot of public librarians is that they're scared because you don't necessarily know how to teach, whereas I think with academic librarians a little bit more often, you're teaching classes like Intro to the Library. I mean, you're teaching a class like Intro to the Library or Database Searching or something for the students. So I think even just pairing up public librarians and academic librarians so everybody can see how the other one works and can maybe offer tips is great. I mean, I started doing this, the teaching the classes, before I knew what I was doing, and I was just completely winging it. And I was lucky enough to find some blogs from academic librarians and then some public library blogs that were incredibly helpful. And I kind of picked that up and integrated in with what I was doing. And then each time I teach a class, I try to remember what happened the last time and kind of revise and kind of go forward appropriately from there. But I think public and academic librarians can really support each other. We're both kind of doing the same thing with, I think, a slightly different learner base. But, I mean, everybody comes to the library really for these classes because they want to learn.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as academic librarians, we do a lot less, you know, like technology training, certainly.
We do, yeah.
But, you know, database, some components of like database searching are not entirely dissimilar. You know, that there are things that are similar in teaching a specific software or something like that. So I don't know. I think a lot of times academic librarians don't really think about the public library. And I don't think that academic librarians acknowledge enough that our students go to the public library. Yeah. You know, I'm sure you see some college students in your library, right?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of the times when they're doing research and stuff, that's my first thing is to say, you're a college student, use your college library. Like that's one of the biggest things, I think the difference is in terms of resources is that for college students, the journals, the really juicy, really fun kind of reference databases, they're all going to be found in the college subscriptions, whereas we as public libraries, we just can't afford them. So we don't really have access to stuff like JSTOR and all of those really fun, in-depth places where students can get the articles they need.
Yeah. I think another issue is that, you know, public librarians, like you mentioned, are not as familiar with, you know, what's available at the academic library, and I think academic librarians are even worse at knowing what's available at the public library. And I think that really does a disservice to students because we should know that, you know.
Yeah, I also think, I would really like to take a couple pages from your book as far as starting at the beginning with technology. And I remember thinking about that a little earlier on in my career, and I just haven't thought of it lately. And of course, in college, we also have students that when you say open up the browser, you know, like look at you kind of dumbfounded. But we also have to be willing to start at the beginning or those students aren't going to be, you know, searching databases for scholarly articles if they're not sure what open the browser means.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing, too, what really helped me, particularly when I first started, now I'm more used to it, but when people can't do that kind of stuff, particularly when they're people who are returning to college or they're just non-traditional learners, they get angry. And that was the biggest thing for me to realize is that they're not angry at me. They're angry at the technology. Yeah. And so if you just approach it, just not letting it bother you, but just keep focusing on, let me connect you with the technology. Not only do they get really happy, but man, like when you get them to where they need to be and everybody's smiling, it feels so good.
Yes.
But it's getting over that anger piece first. And it's not necessarily always anger, but it's frustrations, irritations. It's that block that people put up. And I know I bet you guys see it a lot, just like you were talking about, like when people want to start and you're trying to teach databases, but they can't open up the browser. A lot of times people get defensive. It's the first thing they do. And so to kind of be able to move past that. And it's harder for you guys, too, because, like, I would imagine, when I teach my classes, I limit them to, I don't want any more than 5 people in a class, just because if I have everybody on the computers at a different pace, I can't keep track of where everybody is. You guys are teaching like much larger classes, if I'm correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Usually, ours aren't that big and they're still 20 to 25 usually. So,
yeah.
Well, and you know, to kind of go off of, again, what I was saying before about, I think one of the problems that I think academic librarians need to acknowledge is that if those students come here and we tell them to open up their browser and they don't know how to do it and they get angry or frustrated or embarrassed or whatever it is, often they'll turn to the public library. And not that that's a bad thing, because that's
if we're lucky.
If we're lucky, otherwise they just went to Google. But I mean, I have had lots of students who have said, you know what, I'll just go to the public library. And I think that's great, because I think that shows to me that, like, they are comfortable with their public library. They're happy with their public library, you know, and I think maybe public libraries do a better job of being more approachable to everybody than I think some, not all, but some academic libraries.
Yeah. I think my experience in public libraries has been, and from what you're describing, Mickey, is that they really kind of demystify and reduce some of the library anxiety that I think if students were comfortable in high school or as adults before returning, that the college library then seems really intimidating. And if we use vocabulary that intimidates them and we just say, what database did you look in? And they're like, I don't know what a database is, you know, and we're not making friends. We're not meeting them where they are.
Right. Well, and, you know, Mickey, you and I, where I met Mickey was we worked at the Internet Public Library. And so we saw a lot of questions, right, from, you know, clearly academic questions from people who we don't know exactly the reason, but, you know, I suspect at least some of them were, they didn't know how to approach their academic library, or they didn't know what was available to them. And, you know, somehow they came upon us. Either they knew about us already, or they just Googled, you know, something like homework help or questions or something like that. You know, so those people are out there and they're turning to other places. I mean, would you agree with that, Mickey?
Yeah, definitely. And I remember actually a lot what we would do at the IPL as well, is that we would always try to, if they provided us a location, we would try to connect them up with a local resource, back to their local resources. And that was actually one of the things we tried to also try to get, like, all of the students who came through to remember as well, is that, you know, we can help them with some of the stuff and get the answers, but for more stuff, to keep sending them back and make those local connections wherever they are. I don't know. I think that the people's approach, I think a lot of what you were saying as well, it's so much dependent on personality, because I can think of some super awesome, incredibly approachable, really wonderful, like, academic librarians, and I can think of some public librarians who are great if you hit them in their silos of knowledge, but maybe not so great outside of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part as well, is that we as a profession kind of, I mean, I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses, I know sometimes where I can give you the basic information, and then I know I'm not going to be able to get much farther, like, with genealogy. I mean, I'm not from Sharon, Massachusetts. While I can help you with some basic information, I'm going to turn you over to the Historical Society or connect you up with people who can do more. And I think sometimes that's the making those connections for people is maybe just as important as actually showing them kind of what to do, is making them feel like, I mean, nobody knows everything, but making sure that they have that next step, kind of just exactly like what we used to do at the Internet Public Library, like, this is the answer, but this is the next step you need to take, just to kind of reaffirm that.
Well, right. And I think that, I think most librarians understand that they can't, you know, do everything. But I also think sometimes there's a reluctance to refer or pass on. I think some people either don't know that they're not giving complete help, or they don't want to pass it on for whatever reason. And, you know, so I think that you talked about silos, and I think that's a problem. That's exactly why we wanted to talk to you, because too often we are all types of librarians kind of silo ourselves, and we don't really think about the fact that our students are not siloed. They interact with all types of librarians.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that was what I said before, is totally not a knock on any librarians whatsoever. It was just, and I do it as well. The first thing I had to learn, particularly, like, in a public library, is that, I mean, I had to lose all sense of shame in terms of saying, like, I don't know something.
Yeah.
Let me figure this out. Because I haven't been, I mean, I've worked at three different libraries, and I think in the past 6.5 years. And so I don't have that kind of, that breadth of knowledge necessarily that I would from having worked at one library for a very long time and knowing the local area and stuff. And so I've just kind of shed all of that. And so if I have a question that's a local question, I'll just go find someone who I know who the local, who might be able to help.
Yeah.
And that I think is, as a librarian, you want to have that information and you want to be able to deliver it. I just had to learn that sometimes I just got to go find the person who's going to be the best one, and it ain't going to be me.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Mickey, I've got another question for you that's a bit of a shift, but goes back to the silos, because to be honest, I don't have the first idea what people are talking about in the public library conferences, local, national, or otherwise, in the publications. And I wonder if there's something in particular that's sort of trending or a hot issue in public libraries that you are particularly passionate about, and if you could just fill us in on that.
Well, I mean, it's actually what we're talking about. It's the whole instructional design and tech. Librarians really want to be teaching more. I mean, it's a matter of knowing how. It's that, I mean, I go to work and I have to order books, I have to order movies, I have to help patrons with technology. There's a lot of things I have to do. There are a lot of things that I would really love to do, like within my daily job, that I'm trying to learn all I can about. And a lot of the kind of designing classes, the most effective way, right now, a lot of what I do is I leapfrog off of some, like with the Denver Public Library, Seattle Public Library, New York Public Library. They all have their classes up. Not only do they have classes that I can kind of like literally pull from, but they've designed handouts for people, but they've also designed how to teach it. So they give you step-by-step exactly how to teach a class. So we're doing a 6-part Excel class. I really love doing it. It's our second time we've done it round. And I'm like literally using the handouts from the Denver Public Library and they're exact instructional. They say like, click here, go here, use this column. They give examples. It's perfect. And for public libraries in particular, we don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of stuff, having this stuff available is perfect. In a perfect world, I wish I had more time and could design all of this on my own and I could do my own handouts and whatnot. But there's a lot of talk in the public library sphere of kind of how we can help people learn. And this is one of the best ways is like, for me, it's resource sharing.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that I've put out to share is totally not as good as anything like technology. I've put out like programs like how to make a paper, a book flower. So step-by-step instructions for any librarian who wants to do an art craft so they can make book flowers. And so I just created a Google Slides PowerPoint with pictures and step-by-step instructions and shared it out so that anybody else who wants to take this and do this program in their library can do it. And so I think stuff like that is, there's a lot of chatter about it more and more in terms of how can we teach effectively, because that's what public libraries were kind of shifting into is a place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've always been a place for people to research, but now it's a place for people to kind of learn more.
Yeah, well, I think that ties in with the whole, you know, makerspace idea, right? As the library as being a place to create things and also knowledge, you know, new knowledge. I'm excited about that. I think it's great.
Very illuminating. And I'm so happy we're having this conversation.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I don't get much of a chance to talk to academic librarians, although I do work with some librarians like on a state level who are in academic libraries. So I kind of see, and what's fascinating is that I think depending on if it's a community college or like a state university or whatnot, like the issues we face are all kind of different, but they're more and more kind of becoming parallel to one another in terms of helping people. And it's not just the information anymore. A lot of times it's social services. And so it's not just like, let me find you something in a book, but maybe let me connect you up with a website that will help you get government services for whatever you need, which I think is kind of fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I know my library just got a social worker. So, I mean, that's certainly, the trend.
Makes a lot of sense.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And my local library, I mean to say, not where I work, but yeah, which actually, I don't know if there's academic libraries doing that kind of stuff too. I've not heard of it.
I think there are a couple of libraries in Massachusetts. And I just, again, happen to know one of the women I worked, she was in my cohort with the Project SET last year. She was working actually on that exact issue, which is kind of bringing more social services into libraries, because she had some patrons who were experiencing either having issues with homelessness or lack of government services, and she wanted to be able to help. And so she focused her project. We each did a presentation before a statewide panel, and hers was phenomenal. Hers was all about kind of how to help people in libraries, how to get the services in academic libraries. And as far as I know, she's presenting at the statewide conference this year on it as well. So she's kind of taken her project. She's really run with it. It's phenomenal. Oh, I did something on memes, which, I mean, was fun, but perhaps not as, like, useful as the rest.
Well, and I can see academic libraries. I mean, our students have all of those same issues. But mm-hmm. I also feel like the local version is having students come to us and being like, how do I add a class? How do I pay my tuition? And when I was mm-hmm. at my previous institution, I'd been there long enough that I was like, go to this office on this floor, speak to this person. And being new, it's been tougher to just sort of be like, I don't know. Let me see if I can help you find mm-hmm. out. But it's sort of like a, well, student services, I guess.
Yeah.
As opposed to social services. Yeah.
Well, I think this is actually something that I think academic libraries should consider. And, you know, like I wrote that book chapter on critical literacy. I wrote a book chapter last year on critical literacy. And one of the things that I talked about was about how, you know, academic libraries kind of aren't really thinking about a lot of those issues that our students are facing and whether or not the library can play a role. Now, I don't think that necessarily means we need a social worker, but I think that not sort of considering mm-hmm. what role the library can play in helping students with their lives outside of school, I just don't think that we're fulfilling some of our purpose that we could have. I don't know. That's my soapbox.
I haven't read your chapter. You'll have to send it to me. You should post it in the on the podcast too. So,
and actually, maybe I'd love to get the information about this academic librarian. Maybe if she has information about her presentation or something, we'd love to post that in the blog entry. But
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I can totally hook you guys up. She's really great, and it's such like a for her and her community and in the community library where she's at. It's such an important service that she's providing. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it may be too. And as you guys were talking, it just kind of occurred to me as well. It's I think at a public library, we're so used to. I'm used to anybody kind of walk in the door for any reason, and so. Nothing is really, I mean, I have people who come in who present very well, but only when talking to them do you realize that something is really kind of off. And then you're trying to figure out, like, how can I help you, not only with the question that you're posing me, but with the larger issue of, are you okay? Do you need something that you're not necessarily asking for? I think maybe just because of the population you guys have at academic libraries, some of it self-selects.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't have like some of those issues necessarily, or you're not exposed to it quite as much. Not to say that you guys don't have crazy people walk into your library, because I think those people are everywhere and they're fun most of the time. They're just as enjoyable as anyone else. But sometimes it's a matter of trying to figure out how can I help you and get you best to the services. And I don't necessarily think I don't know. It's just me spitballing, but like. The academic library is just, you don't have that as much because those people aren't necessarily in the need of those services. They haven't gotten to that level yet.
Well, I think they exist in colleges, but I don't necessarily think they often make uh-huh. it to the library.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that professors will encounter, or admissions counselors or something like that. But, you know, we don't usually have
residence halls.
Yeah, something like that. But especially because, you know, we're a commuter college and you know, you pointed out making people self-select to be here. So it's a different crowd. We do get mm-hmm. members of the public, but again, it's not very you know, we don't get just everybody, general public. We get people who are motivated for one reason or looking for something specific, you know, that we have generally. All right. Well, I think it's time to wrap it up, but thank you so much for being here, Mickey.
Yeah. Thanks for making the time to talk with us.
Yeah. And everybody, please go to our website, thelibrarysessions.wordpress.com, and join in the conversation and tell Mickey that she is a wizard.
Yeah.
No, that's going to curse me. Please don't do that.
All right. Thanks,
I don't
Mickey.
Want to be jinxed. Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is really a pleasure to talk to you.
The Library Sessions is produced by Martini Kalerduff and Jennifer Laubant, and it's released under a Creative Commons license with some rights reserved. The music in this episode is from The Library Ants. You can check them out at the Free Music Archive or see the link on our website at thelibrarysessions.wordpress.com.